broadcasting worldwide.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Well, welcome everybody to today's show. My name is Mark Kohler. I'm here with my infamous partner, Matt Sorensen, the co-host of Refresh Your Wealth, and I want to welcome all of you here listening today. Hopefully, you're catching us from a variety of options in your listening choices out there. We're here on iTunes every week on Thursday. We're also here on AM radio around the country. Also, you may be catching us at biztalkradio.com or their app, BizTalk Radio. And just want to welcome you. We're excited to be here talking about building wealth, saving taxes, protecting your assets, kind of coming from that tax and legal angle. There's not a lot of shows out there that strictly hit taxes and legal. And I myself am an attorney and CPA, and my amazing partner, Matt Sorensen, also an attorney.
Yeah, and this is a cool topic today. We're having the intersection of building wealth, real estate. We're going to be talking about tenants, some legal issues that unfortunately can arise as you have tenants. And this is one I think is really important as you talk about building wealth with real estate, is understanding how to deal with tenants, how to make sure you get the right tenants, which we're going to ask our guest, Chris Wilson, who will be on the show later on. He's a real estate broker, professional, property manager, investor himself. He's done it all in the real estate world. And we're going to get his insights on this, but it's really important to get this right, and it means a lot to your bottom line and how you're building wealth with real estate. And I know, Mark, you know, both you and I, we, you know, not only are counseling our clients about their rentals from a legal and tax standpoint, but we own rentals and we have to deal with tenants too.
Yeah, no, this is a huge topic, and I, of course, the topic of the show specifically is nightmare tenants and how to get rid of them if you have to. Kind of going on our Halloween theme. Last week, scariest scams. This week, nightmare tenants. So happy Halloween. Happy October. This is a wonderful time of year. We love the fall. I want to give a little shout out to my University of Utah Utes. Top five this week. Matt, you're a Ute fan too. I know you're loving it. This is a big deal.
Oh yeah, it's great. You know, I've been such a loser this year. I can't even tell you what. I know Utah beat Oregon, but I just haven't even followed sports like I should. I mean, I shouldn't even be able to root for them right now at number five. I haven't participated. I haven't been there on the couch watching the games for them, you know?
You know, we'll take a bandwagon fan anytime. You can jump on. Jump on board. I'll pull up the wagon. You can jump on.
Yeah, I have a degree there. I spent a lot of money there, so, you know, so that's something.
Yeah. Time to cash in. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening today, because we do want you building wealth, and real estate is a huge part of it. So we're going to be talking about this shortly, going into all the different tips on what to do with a nightmare tenant, because buying rentals is critical to building wealth. And then as an offshoot of that, understanding how to deal with tenants becomes a primary goal in the process. So, but first, before we get into our topic at hand, I'd like to share a little tax tip if I could.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
Love that sound, a little bit of Sprite there. I feel crisp and fresh, and we're going to refresh your tax plan right here. Now, this is important. You know, and Matt, it's sad. I have so many people come up and go, Mark, I don't need to understand taxes. I've got you. I've got an accountant. They'll take care of it. Well, folks, that is not a good way to approach your tax planning, because your accountant takes what you give them. And so here's a tip of something you can give your accountant that could have a major impact on your tax return, and that is using per diem rates. Per diem rates for food and for lodging. Now, the typical situation that most business owners employ is they'll go out on a trip, take their hotel receipt, they'll use their debit card or credit card, and then they'll buy some food, and then they'll use those receipts for their tax return. You know, and again, if we're talking about rental property, you may go visit grandma and you've got a rental property there during Thanksgiving, and you check on your rental and you write off some travel to go check on your rental and maybe write off some hotel and food. However, when you're traveling for business, you are allowed to take the per diem rate or the actual expense, whichever is greater. And it creates a really simple way to turn in that expense to your accountant. So what you need to do is keep a good calendar of your trips during the year, point out the major cities that you were at or nearby, and then you can go to the tables. Your accountant will go to the tables and pull those. You can yourself go to irs.gov, look up per diem lodging and food or meal rates, and find out what the per diem rate is for a particular city. And it can add up big time. I've taken a per diem rate and then went to 7-Eleven and had a chili dog, Matt, you know. So I got a big deduction and loved it.
Yeah. You also got some health effects that are going to, you know, you gain probably 3 pounds from the chili dog, and you might have been sick for a couple of days, but you saved on taxes.
No, I felt like a rock star. Now, you know, I'm just going to throw this out too. Like some of the biggest cities expensive, Telluride, Colorado. Now, if you can find a business reason to go to Telluride, Colorado, you could be as high as $428 for the per diem rate for that day. And
this is for lodging and food for the day?
Yeah, you could take the lodging per diem or the food per diem or both.
Okay.
And this makes it easy for a lot of you that travel with cash or you don't keep good receipts. You can just say, oh, I made 10 trips this year. Here's the 10 cities I went to. I spent, you know, 3 nights here, 1 night there, whatever. And then you just turn it in and then you can look to the table quickly and the write-offs can be significant. So there you go.
Wow, I love that. You know what? This is one I'm going to start using because I've been keeping my dang receipts and I could have been eating taco dogs and keeping all that money in my pocket and still getting a tax write-off.
Yeah. I hear you. Taco dog. I like that. Taco dog. Yeah. You got to explain that.
That's an Arizona thing. You know, it's the perfect intersection of American food. And, you know, we're so close to the Mexican border. We have taco dogs here. So it's quite the craze. Ask Kevin Kennedy in the law firm. He's a connoisseur of taco dogs.
I've got to come visit more often. Obviously, you're giving me a hard time about eating chili dogs at 7-Eleven. I'll have to get on that bandwagon.
Yeah, don't compare your chili dogs to a taco dog, dude. All right, well, let me jump over to the legal tip now.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
Okay, now this legal tip, I just given you everybody fair warning. This one's serious. I know Mark's tax tip was serious, but this is serious. So I'm going to have a somber mood for this. I'm going to try not to crack any jokes.
Oh, great.
Okay, so California, the great state of California, just passed a law recently enabling physician-assisted suicide. Now, there are 5 states in the United States that allow for physician-assisted suicide for persons who are terminally ill. Oregon's, you know, been a leader in that. That's where Dr. Kevorkian, Washington State, California. There's 2 others, apparently. So it's brand new in California, you know, obviously a large state. And it caused a lot of controversy. People obviously have differing opinions about that. But it brings up a really important estate planning topic as that's been in the news that I wanted to point out. And that is the importance of having an advance directive or living will that states, if you're in a vegetative state, you're deciding now, do I want to be removed from life support or not? And it's an important document to have as part of your estate plan. Any good estate plan should include that document. Each state has a little bit different form that you can complete for it, but it gives your intentions to your family to address that important end-of-life decision. And it really is important to bring into this conversation that's happened in the news recently on the physician-assisted suicide.
No, that's a great tip, Matt. And I, you know, my wife usually says that's your inside voice. Don't say it, but I'm going to throw it out there. When I was, you know, I was born in Oregon and went to law school in Oregon. And so when I was starting to do estate planning for Oregon clients, I was going to co-author a book with Dr. Kevorkian, you know, Kohler and Kevorkian, estate planning, assisted suicide, you know, bring the two together, make it happen. You know,
I mean,
you can do that.
It is. And if you've been to a hospital, you know, you've gone in for surgery or anything like that, they asked for that. I broke my thumb recently and I went in to see about my thumb to see an orthopedic surgeon. They asked me, do you have an advanced directive or living will. They want to know that just to look at my thumb, because they want to know, I guess, if I, you know, have a medical problem that I'm taking care of. But important part to have part of your estate plan. So make sure you have that, even if you just have a basic will. It's something that really helps your family members not have to make that decision for you. And it does happen. Every year, one of the attorneys has that situation with a client where a family member's in this situation. They don't have an advanced directive or living will. And it's hard for the family to make that decision to pull the plug. If you have the advanced directive or living will, the person already made that decision for themselves, and you're simply just carrying it out. So look for that. Make sure it's in your estate plan. Also, if you got family members or parents, ask them if they've got a living will or an advanced directive. Be proactive in making sure they have their estate in order, because it's going to be you having to deal with it if they don't. All right, well, we're going to be back with more on the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
All right. Welcome back, everybody, to the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Matt Sorensen and Mark Kohler here talking about nightmare tenants and how to get rid of them. That's the topic of the day. And, of course, we've been working through some tax and legal tips. Of course, Mark Kohler, myself, just shared a wonderful tip on ways to write off your food and dining and travel and all that good stuff. Well, of course, Matt, Debbie Downer, had to bring up assisted suicide. So thank you, Matt. We appreciate that. Boy, I don't know where to go from there. I'm a little sad after that. But thanks for sharing.
Yeah,
that.
I know. And it was, and then my taking us out on the show there before the break there was a self-inflicted suicide. I didn't need any help. I just totally destroyed, the outtake on the show there. So, I'm going to have to do some extra work or makeup work or something. Maybe practice more. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, this is why, folks, if you're an attorney or CPA, you do not start a radio show. It's just it's a professional suicide, because people really know how good really you are on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Let me stick
to the format of the show. Keep it clean, keep it tight.
Stay in the game plan. That's the best.
That's what Coach told me. I'm just going to stick to the game plan. Coach knew what he's talking about, man.
All right. You do it.
Don't take the ball and run around. Do whatever the heck you want. You run those routes. That's why I never made it out of Little League.
Yeah, right. that brings us to the question of the week. Yeah, well, let's stick to the route here. So what was last week's question, Matt?
All right. Okay. The last week's question was, what document do you use to state who raises your children upon your death, a will or a trust? Now, we had an answer come in from Celeste from Chandler, Arizona. And this is an Arizona show today. We got Chris Wilson coming in from Arizona as our guest. We got Celeste with the answer here, who stated that you state that in your will, which is the correct answer. And the will is actually, this is called guardianship designation. It occurs in your will. So even if you have a trust for your estate plan, you're going to have a will, and you're going to list out who will be the guardian of your children upon your passing if your children are still minors. So really important to take care of.
Yeah, good job, Celeste. Thanks for emailing right in and winning a copy of either my book or Matt's book. We'll get that right off to you, so make sure you email us your address. And I'm going to just say it right now here, another disclaimer. I don't know what it is, folks. We are not all about talking about death and estate planning. Just a couple topics here about that, but we do help clients do estate planning around the country. You can always call in and we'll help you out. But that's not the theme of our firm or our show today. So I just kind of want to throw that out. I want to keep everybody in a happy mood. So I'm going to bring up today's question. Now, this is I want to encourage all of you, whether you're listening to this on iTunes on the weekend or you're right now on AM radio and you can text it in or send a quick email on your smartphone. For the first person that responds to this question, you'll win a free copy of mine or Matt's book, which we just did not give out readily. This is something you got to earn. It is between $15 to $20 with shipping at Amazon. So this is a prized value. And we'll sign it, you can read it, and then give it away at Christmas. Re-gift it. It could work for that. So today's question, folks out there, is we're going to go to gifting, gift tax. And if you want to give a family member money, or give me some money, but if you want to give someone some money, there's a gift tax rule that if you give someone more than this figure in 2015, if you give away more than this amount, and you don't have an exemption for it, if you gift more than this dollar amount for 2015, then you have to pay gift tax or file a gift tax return and use up some of your lifetime gifting amount, because you have an amount you can gift away during your entire life. The super rich love to talk about this. But for even us little folks out here, there's that gift tax amount, and we need to know what it is. So the question is, what is the gift tax exemption amount for 2015? Run to your phones, run to your computers. The lines are ringing right now. You could win one of mine or Matt's books. So there you go. That's the question of the week, Matt.
Yeah. Signed copies of the book. Now, 1, 2, 3, go. I like how you're like, all right, now go.
Now go.
It's a race.
No, go now. Yeah, so. Well, let's jump into the topic today. Now, without any further ado, Matt, I know you're a landlord. As you've had to deal with some problem tenants in the past, and as a lawyer consulting clients daily with all sorts of legal issues, what's one of your off-the-cuff tips that just the average person would not think about?
Yeah, I think as you're looking to get into rental real estate, or if you already have them, one of the things I've learned to be important about is to have documents in place. And when you get problem tenants, what's going to control? The terms of your lease. So you want to make sure you have a good, solid lease agreement for the situation that you're involved in. And I think, you know, every state has their own little nuances on landlord-tenant laws. But having a good, solid lease that protects you as a landlord and is still fair to your tenant is really critical. And so many times I get clients who call me and they have a situation on a property, and it could be many times it's non-payment, but they have a terrible lease agreement. There's no clear definition of remedies. There's no clear definition. Are you going to get your costs or your attorney's fees back if you take them through eviction? So starting off with a good foundation, get a good lease agreement. Have some documents in writing, and do a check-in, check-out procedure too, where the tenant goes through and looks at the property and signs off saying the property is in good condition when they moved in.
Oh, no, I love it. And with the advent of smartphones and the technology today, it is so easy to document when you're walking through a new tenant in your rental, and making sure you're documenting everything. So important. And I wanted to share this, Matt. I was doing a little research, and I'm a big fan of Brandon Turner. He's a best-selling author of the book How to Rent Your House. And I really liked his article out on the web on 5 tips to deal with kind of these nightmare tenants. And I'm just going to read these real quick. Is that okay, Matt? Just going to throw it out. Just throw it out there. Okay. I'm just going to read these quickly. Number one, don't scream, but screen. Do better job screening up front. Number 2, have a written policy, which goes to your point, Matt, making sure you're always upfront on a good quality lease to begin with. Be strict and carry a big stick. Stick to your guns. Don't give in. You're going to set a bad precedent with your tenant. Number 4, don't be the landlord. If you're a bleeding heart like me, you want a manager of the property to be the tough guy. And number 5, don't be afraid to remove the problem. Once you've got a bad tenant, identify it, get rid of them. Don't, again, be a bleeding heart or get into a desperate mentality. Just deal with it and get over it. So there are little 5 tips right there. You know, some people make a list if they like.
Yeah, I love that. And we're also going to ask Chris. You know, he's been a property manager. He's owned properties himself. We're going to ask him, when do you hire a property manager? When should you self-manage your own properties? When should you get a property manager? And be interested to see his insights he's going to have on that. So as you're thinking about rental properties and you're thinking about your tenants, one other point I just want to make besides the lease agreement is keep in mind the tenant is the one who sends you a check every month. That's the most important person in the process here. You can have the best property and crappy tenants, and you're not going to make any money, okay? You're going to rely on this person to send you a check every month. Make sure it's the right person. Make sure you treat them well. You'd be a good landlord, and your property's in good condition, and then you're entitled, you know, to demand those great tenants, and that's going to make your real estate investments even the more beneficial. Well, come back. We're going to be, after the break, introducing Chris Wilson, our expert today on the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. Welcome back to the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen, a show dedicated to helping you navigate the law, save on taxes, and build wealth. And now we're getting to that final point where we're going to bring in our special guest. I'm going to let Mark do the honors, though, and introduce Chris.
Well, I'm so excited to have this gentleman with us. He's been on our show a couple times over the years, and this would probably be his third time on the show. We love it when we get to have Chris Wilson, master, amazing real estate investor out of Phoenix, Arizona. He's a broker, a real estate property manager, developer. He's done it all. If you live in Phoenix and you've done real estate, there's a good chance you've bumped in to Mr. Chris Wilson. And so we're really excited to have him here with us. Welcome, Chris.
Well, thank you, Mark and Matt. It's nice to hear both of you.
Well, thank you. Now, already in the show here, we've already been for tips as lawyers of ways to get rid of nightmare tenants. And for what that's worth, I don't know. Hopefully our listeners have enjoyed that. But now we get to talk to you, Chris, that are out there in the trenches every day doing this, making it happen for your properties as well as many, many of your clients. I know you've had property management companies over and over again over the years. I guess I'm just going to throw that first right out the bat. How do you just love working with all your tenants? How's that going for you?
Well, you know, tenants, I always say this, and I've been saying it for years, tenants are like having kids. When you keep them conforming to the rules, and they behave or they decide they want to be a good kid, tenants are a pleasure to deal with. When they decide they want to be the bad kid or they don't like the rules or even something as simple as it's a holiday and they got better things to spend their money on than paying your rent, they become a problem. Over the years, it's been my experience that all tenants are good tenants and all tenants are bad tenants. A lot of times, it's circumstances in life that create a bad tenant. There are truly bad tenants floating around out there that it seems like most new investors tend to attract to their rentals. But once you get away from the screening problem and how to find good tenants, most tenants are good tenants until something in life happens and they become not so good.
All right. Well, Chris, I love your parenting analogy there. It's I find that to be very true as a landlord and a father. There's a lot of truth there. There's some crossover.
Yeah, just like the teenagers, right, Matt?
Exactly. I got two of them. You mentioned screening tenants. I want to talk about how we get to the. We want to make sure we cover. I got the nightmare tenant. But let's talk about the screening process to avoid the nightmare tenant. What do you like to do on the front end when you're screening a tenant? And you mentioned new investors mess this up. What are they doing wrong? What should they be doing?
Well, you know, a lot of new investors, and for that matter, in my experience, a lot of property management companies, are too concerned with not having a vacancy in the house. So basically, Any tenant that comes in that has the money to put down for some sort of deposit, not even all the time the full deposit, they tend to take and put in the house and figure they'll evict them later. That's generally a bad concept. You're better off, you know, every time you do an eviction on a tenant, you're basically losing 60 days of rent. The 30 days they already owe you and the 30 days it's going to take to find somebody new. So if you put a bad tenant in your house and they only stay 3 months, and then you have to evict them, basically you've lost half a year in dealing with a problem tenant, and you should have never gotten there in the first place. It's a bad concept to put them in and worry about evicting them later. If you do your proper screening up front, make sure they can pay your rent, make sure they're going to, tenants never take care of the property as well as you will as an owner, but make sure they take care of the property good for a tenant, and that they have the wherewithal to follow your rules, and they understand they must follow your rules. And traditionally, they have a good background for a tenant, a good tenant history. You save yourself a lot of problems up front.
Well,
the mistake
you know what
new investors make is they don't do any of that.
Yeah, you know the term that I really like? You're always so perceptive, Chris. I've learned a lot about property management myself, sitting in the back of classrooms where you've been teaching. It's always a pleasure. And I really like what you just said there. I'm going to put a different term to it, and that's the desperation mentality. that as an investor, you get desperate. And not only do you maybe put the wrong tenant in, I've even done this myself. I have a tenant not paying the rent, and I'm desperate because I don't want to lose rent for 2 months. So I work with them, and I don't start the eviction processes maybe as soon as I should, and I end up getting screwed over because I'm desperate. And I think you've said that before, too, that once you have a problem, don't jerk around. Get moving forward. And I don't know. Do you think that desperation mentality plays out in other aspects of management?
I think desperation mentality pays out in trying to work with tenants to collect rent. Now, having said that, there are some tenants that have real financial issues, and it's a one-time thing. And a one-time thing, please understand, for most tenants, that means once a year. It's a one-time thing, but they agree to pay and make it up, and we move on. But there's a lot of tenants that once they get that upper leg and realize they don't have to pay rent, they don't. Matter of fact, I saw one on TV, believe it or not, on People's Court just the other day. We were packing to go out of town, and TV was on in the background. It made me stop. The guy had been collecting $20 and $30 a week on an $800, $900 a month rent from this tenant for 4 years, where they agreed they were going to make payments and catch everything up when they got their tax return. They got their settlement for a lawsuit. Now he's in People's Court trying to evict them. The tenant's arguing since they never had to pay before, they shouldn't have to pay now. He's arguing he tried to work with them. They need to pay the money or get out. You're the judge sitting there. What do you decide? I mean, you're looking at both of them saying, which one of you two are stupider?
That's People Court in a nutshell.
Yeah, that's how decisions are made in People's Court.
The funny the part less stupid is, person I've sat wins. In court and seen that happen in real life, too. It just, when you see you've got a problem, if you don't take action on the problem, what happens to you is your own fault.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, let me ask you, I love the practical tip there about not being desperate and getting the right tenant in there, because there is such a time lag if you get the wrong person in there. So be choosy, I guess. But I wanted to talk about, when should someone use a property manager versus self-manage? Is it an issue of being in the different state, or what if you're in your same state? I mean, what do you typically tell people? You definitely need a property manager, or you could try and self-manage. What's helpful for people to know whether they should be managing themselves or using a property manager?
That's a good question. There's two things that I tell people on that. Number one, if you can't go visit your property weekly, at least drive by and see what the outside looks like, you need a property manager. Because in a month, the outside of your property can look bad. In six or seven months, it can be trashed.
Yeah, but Chris, I mean, how many property managers?
If the outside is trashed, the inside is being taken care of the same way.
Yeah, but I was just...
If you can't maintain your property, or if you can't see your property, you should probably hire a property manager. Number two, if you're not used to dealing with tenants, or you don't like telling people they're doing something wrong and they've got to make a correction, you need to hire a property manager.
Well, I was just trying to interject there. Forgive me, Chris, because I was going to say I've got properties in other states, so clearly I've got a property manager involved. But even locally, I mean, should you be expecting your property manager to drive by weekly? Are they going to be doing that if you're not able to?
You know, I find that most good property management companies have people in the field all the time doing repairs and minor other work on houses and or leasing houses. A good quality property management company. So they have people driving by your property frequently. Maybe it's not every week. Maybe it's once a month. But they're still driving by your property frequently and checking them out. You know, even the banks are doing that today. For example, I've got a mortgage on a property. I just got notice from my bank. They did a drive-by, and we had some window shades over the south-facing windows. They noted we pulled them off.
Wow.
If the banks are driving by and checking out properties and you're a property owner, why wouldn't you do the same thing?
That's very ambitious for a bank. I love it. Well, I just think it's really – I like that tip. We talked about that a little earlier in the show, that if you don't have lack of – for lack of a better word – the guts to be a tough property manager, that's a key indicator you need a property manager, because I'm a bleeding heart. I'm terrible at this. So, hey, now let's, Chris, we're going to take a quick break. And if you're willing, could you come back and maybe tell us about some of your techniques for just a few minutes on what to do when eviction does start? Are there some tips during the eviction process? Have you got just a couple more minutes you can share with us?
No problem.
All right. Thanks so much. Well, folks, you're listening to Refresh Your Wealth with Mark Kohler, Matt Sorensen. We're talking to real estate expert, broker, and property manager out of Phoenix, Arizona. So please stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. And we're going to be right back with more tricks and strategies on how to deal with nightmare tenants.
Welcome back to the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. We're here with Chris Wilson, a real estate expert on property management. And Chris, we were starting to delve into dealing with the eviction process and maybe in your language, the problem child tenant, so to speak. So maybe walk someone through and walk us through the process of tips and strategies to be doing when you have the problem tenant and getting to that eviction process.
Well, you know, there's two ways to deal with the eviction process as a non-lawyer property owner. The first is to convince the tenant to move. Now, obviously, you can't do anything illegal, like you hear these stories about taking the doors off the house and changing the locks on the tenant. The tenant has a right to be in the house until you get them out. Sometimes it's cheaper to give them a couple $100 to get them to move than to go through the eviction process, especially if your paperwork and your hands aren't really clean. However, there's a bunch of tenants out there that know the game and try to hold out for more money. So sooner or later, you end up doing an eviction. There's not always a lot of ways around it. Each state is a little different for the eviction, but most states all follow the same basic procedure. You have to give them notice that they're in default, whether it's for terms of the lease or for non-payment of rent, and there's two different time periods for that. When you give them that notice, each state specifies how long that notice must be out before you file for the eviction proceeding. Make sure you count your days right, because if you don't, you get it over again from scratch. When you start your eviction proceeding, you're going to give them the notice that they're not forming. Let's face it, most evictions are they're not paying rent. And so you're going to give them a notice they're not paying rent. You're going to tell them how much they owe you, plus late fees and penalties. And in many states, you can include the cost of the eviction in there. You go to court, you stand up before the judge, you tell them your story. Your story should be simple and straightforward. The tenant is going to do their own thing. Now, having said all that, there's a few problems. The tenant is not going to respond to any document you give them, even when you send registered mail to them. Most times it comes back as refused. The tenant never opened it. That doesn't mean the tenant didn't receive it. In most states, 5 days after it was mailed, it's considered received. Some states are more. But that's the tenant's way of starting to play a game. If the tenant was required to give you a letter or a document, I guarantee you when you show up in court that morning, the tenant will have that document and claim they mailed it to you. All your leases should say that all mailings should come to you, registered mail, return receipt requested. When tenants do that to me in court, I usually stand there before the judge and I show them that term in the lease and ask them to have the tenant provide their return receipt from the post office. 9 times out of 10, the tenant doesn't have one because the ink's not even dry on the paper they're holding. One of the other things we have with tenants is every tenant has a medical problem these days that doesn't allow them to move. That gets really dicey in the states that you're in. In a state like Arizona, where it's a landlord-friendly state, that's relatively easy to deal with. It doesn't really matter. The tenant has to pay rent or they have to get out. But when you're in a state like Illinois or New York, for example, which are very tenant-friendly, the tenant would be able to stay until they find a new place to move. sometimes having a list of apartments that go month to month, or some of the other facilities that aren't so picky on tenants, it makes it easier if you can provide them a new home for the states like Illinois and New York, even if you have to pay the initial deposit to move the tenant over there because it gets them out of your house. Once you start an eviction on a tenant, they start damaging your house from that day on, whether anybody wants to admit it or not. They know they're not staying. They're not taking care of anything. One other thing you really need to be aware of, if you start an eviction, don't stop. If you stop and let the tenant stay, the tenant just learned a lesson. All they got to do is protest and you'll back down. You're the boss. You're in control of your property. You need to protect yourself.
Wow. This has been great. And on that note, everybody rush out and get rentals. So.
Well, you know, you say that, it's funny, Mark. But for everybody that's listening and isn't aware of this already, after the last few years and what we went through with the foreclosure market, the number of rentals and the demand for rentals have gone up almost across the nation, even in traditional housing markets like the greater Chicago area. Rentals have gone up, and the rent rates are continuing to climb, sometimes faster than the housing values are climbing. So it's not a bad time to get rentals. On top of that, there's a lot of these investment groups that bought rentals, and their 3 to 5 years are running out, and they're getting ready to sell them, which creates more opportunity because as they sell their rentals, there's less rentals available on the market.
No, it's great. I think the rental market is just so important, and we talk about it on this show all the time. Well, I want to say, Chris, thank you so much for coming out and sharing some important tips and strategies. And on top of what we did at the top of the hour, we're hoping all of you really found it helpful. And Chris, we hope to have you back. Can we have you back sometime?
Sure. Just make it earlier in the year.
We'll do it. Chris, an avid hunter. He's headed to the mountains here this week. Chris, thank you so much. We'll see you on the backside and catch up with you another time. Thanks so much.
You guys take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Chris. Well.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and jump over to our 5-star review on iTunes. We want to thank those who listen to us on iTunes via the Refresh Your Wealth podcast. We have a 5-star review that came in that said, hard to find this info anywhere. After struggling to decipher effective ways to save on taxes and structure my business, finding this podcast was a huge stroke of luck. So that's a 5-star review. Thanks for sending those in. You can always give reviews on iTunes under the Refresh Your Wealth show.
Well, Matt, awesome. Thanks for sharing that. And everybody, thank you for listening to another episode of Refresh Your Wealth. And we will be back next week at Tuesday, next week on Thursday, boy. And encourage all of you to continue listening and share this with your friends and family. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.